As I've been mentioning, next week is National Back to Church Sunday. 130,000 churches are participating this year. And I mention that because you may find that when you talk to somebody about this issue that they've already heard about it. And that can lead to some interesting conversations. Pew Research Center estimates that of the people they surveyed, they found that the people they surveyed, 47% of the people said they would go to church if they were invited to go to church and had somebody to sit with. So there's all kinds of things out there that are part of this process of coming to church, and certainly would encourage you to bring somebody with you next Sunday. I do also want to say, please, 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 we want this to be a positive experience, and we want people to feel like they would enjoy coming back. Not to feel like they were pressured, interrogated, or confronted in any way. The gospel, the message of Christ, is a very pure thing, and that's what we intend to participate and talk about next week. And we're just going to talk about home and how church fills that role of home in our lives. Across the summer, our young people were involved in some training programs. The various leaders worked with both men and women in that age group to do some preparation, and they did a very good job. If you were here on the Sunday afternoons, you got to listen to some of our young men as they participated in leading prayer, doing scriptures, leading songs, and presenting talks. They're going to have to take my place. I can't even say presenting this morning. Did excellent jobs. Excellent jobs. And this morning, I'm going to steal one of those sermons. Robbie Reed gave a great lesson focusing on light, a tremendously good lesson. And when he got through, the thought I had was, why didn't I think of that? He took three words and correlated those three aspects of light to really make an impact. The three words are light as a beacon, light as a lighthouse, and then light as a flashlight. And that's really good thoughts and really good information. And so with his permission, I'm going to share that information with you this morning. I just was so moved by it. Light is a powerful image in Scripture, a powerful analogy. And we have numerous passages that reinforce that concept. From the very beginning of the Bible, Genesis chapter 1, starting in verse 3 and going into verse 4, God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw that it was good. God just spoke it into existence. In John chapter 8, and then again in John chapter 12, we see Jesus' connection to light. And he will say to us in John 8, 12, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. And in John chapter 12, verse 46, I have come into the world as a light, so that no one who believes in me should stay in darkness. Because of Jesus, we move out of darkness and into light. One last verse that I'd like to share, a longer one. It's from the Sermon on the Mount. It starts in Matthew chapter 5, verse 13, and goes through verse 16. Jesus is going to explain to folks, you're two different things. First of all, you're the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. And then he goes on to into the light image. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Sounds kind of obvious. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand so it gives light to everyone in the house. When we're trying to hide our light, Jesus is saying it doesn't really make any sense to do that, because what's the purpose of a light? The purpose is to illuminate. And then verse 16. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds. And then look at the last part of that verse. They're going to see your good deeds. And what are they going to do? Are they going to say, wow, what a wonderful person you are? That's not what the intention is, because it says when they see your good deeds, they glorify your Father in heaven. It's not about you. It's about what we can and what we're willing to do for God. Let's go back to the three words. A beacon. You know, a beacon can be a powerful image. When I think of a beacon, I think of people who are maybe lost at sea, and that search plane comes over. And they're hoping and praying, I'm sure, that light will see them and that beacon focuses them and they know they're going to be okay. They're going to be rescued. I don't know that it happened this way, but when I think about Paul on the road to Damascus, a beacon that literally creates blinding light. There's no doubt about who this is actually coming from. It's coming from God. And beacon can feel so much like help and rescue. You may remember after 9/11, some people very shortly came up with the idea of the light tribute, and six blocks away from Ground Zero, they set up 88 searchlights to put a lighted beacon into the night to remind people of the presence of the absence of those two towers. And if you saw those images, you were moved by that. You were inspired by that. And to this day, it's an inspiring image. And we see images that remind us of the beacon of God, the power of God. God can break through the darkness. He can bring light in so many difficult situations. And frequently, that may be a one intense beacon, and at other times, it's many of us as smaller lights joining together to create those beacons. The other thing a beacon can do is create exposure. You know, maybe you're looking for a criminal or something like that, flying around in the helicopter looking for this guy in the darkness, and they're able to find that individual because of the power of that beacon. In John chapter 3, verse 20, everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear that their deeds will be exposed. If we have a heart that lends itself to evil, then we're going to like darkness. It's safer there. It's easier there. We don't really want the beacon to shine on us. And yet God is constantly searching with that beacon to provide that illumination so that our deeds shift into a totally different direction. The second word, of course, is lighthouse. Maybe you've seen some beautiful lighthouses. Sometimes those pictures are very impressive. Sometimes we travel to places where we can actually witness the beautiful scenes of lighthouses. Every night, those things are doing impressive jobs, trying to keep the ships from coming into a dangerous place. I've read fascinating stories, and I'm sure many of you have too, about the people who take care of these lighthouses. Many of them in very isolated circumstances for long periods of time because they know that this job is so very critical. You know, if you work for the post office, I'm not trying to be offensive to you in any way, but as I understand, the slogan of the U.S. mail is rain, snow, sleet, or hail, nothing's going to prevent the mail from coming through. Aren't you glad you get all that junk mail every day? You know, we would... To me, it wouldn't matter if we missed a day of mail every now and then. It wouldn't be a big deal. If it's the weather's bad, then we don't have to have that. Yet think about a lighthouse, though. Can a lighthouse take a night off? It's pretty critical that that lighthouse be there. In incredible storm situation, the lighthouse has the strength. It has to be built strong enough that it can resist all of that power. Hold it right there. I don't know if you can see it or not, but do you see that guy in the door? Maybe people down front can. Frightened me to death. I don't want to see the next few frames necessarily. It's the power of the storm is just overwhelming. And when we see these lighthouses, we're reminded of how much ability there is to resist the power of nature. But the lighthouse sends us a message. The lighthouse has a job to do, and the person that's doing that or the people that are doing that are committed to keeping that lighthouse there to make sure that everybody's okay. There's an old story, it's just a story, it is not true, about a U.S. Navy vessel that was out at sea, and they spotted a lighthouse, and they signaled to the lighthouse that the lighthouse needed to move 0 degrees in, or half a degree in a certain direction, and the lighthouse said, that's not possible, you'll have to move. It comes back, you know, this is the, and as the stories tell, this is USS Coral Gables, and you must move, and then they said, sorry, that's not possible. And finally, by direct order of the Admiral of the Atlantic Fleet or whatever like that, and finally the guy got the signal comes back, we're a lighthouse. And the next part of it is your call, because that's actually stayed as a bit of an expression in the Navy. Didn't happen, isn't true, but there are a lot of senior naval officers, and I read a number of them, who like to use the story because it tells a whole lot of things about our self-confidence, arrogance, all kinds of things across that line. That lighthouse is there for a reason. And one of the reasons it's there is to mark the area that's safe and the area that's not. And God does the same thing for us. He provides for us, in the analogy of light and ocean, He provides for us in the ocean a tremendous place where we can do what we want to do. And yet, there is a boundary to that. There's a place where God says, no, you won't do this. And if you insist, you're going to have problems. There's going to be consequences. If the ship comes into that rocky area, there's going to be consequences. If the ship runs aground, there are obviously consequences to that. And that lighthouse is trying to say, this is the safe area. If you stay over there, everything's going to be okay. But if you come here, things are going to get dangerous very quickly. There's a picture here of a cruise ship Concordia. You may remember this from 2012. This ship in the Mediterranean capsized, and if I remember right, I think 32 people were killed as a part of that process. Did the ship have some kind of crazy failure? Did the engines die? There was an explosion? No. The captain was attempting to show off for his girlfriend. Not his wife, his girlfriend. She lives in the town that's right there on the coast, and he wanted to show her that you could sail this vessel between the beach and that spot of land that's behind it there. Resulted in a tremendous loss of life and a tremendous loss of property. The reason I point that out is, you know, the minute you say, okay, I'm going to use this lighthouse analogy and this area where the lighthouse is protecting it is a place where I don't want to be, and the place where it's being illuminated is the place where I do want to be, instantly Satan's going to say, well, you know, you could get closer than that. You could get that boat between the beach and the island. You can accomplish that. And he doesn't necessarily challenge us by saying, don't do this or don't do that or don't get out in the deep water. He says, this edge, you know, if you walk along the edge, you can make it happen. That lighthouse sounds as a testimony to totally something different. The last one is a flashlight. That's our personal illumination. Now, years ago, nobody carried, or not many people, carried a flashlight. How many people here today have a flashlight with them? Virtually everybody does. It's on your cell phone. The battery doesn't run out. We've even chased crabs at the beach with cell phone, with the phones, the flashlight that's on there. We have an illumination. And that just adds intensity, I believe, because God has given us His Word to use as a lamp. We talk about that in broad terms, and that's great, but in personal terms, it's even more important. We have a personal understanding of God's word, or at least we should. Psalms 119, verse 105 says, your word is a lamp for my feet, a light on my path. Years ago, Terry and I were doing a children's Bible hour program, and I was telling this little story and kind of making it up as I went. And I was talking to the children about staying on the lighted path, because if you got off the lighted path, all these terrible things could start to happen to you. And I got a little too aggressive with the bad things that could happen to you. And I looked over and Terry was going, Don't say any more. You know, you've said plenty. I want you to know that I've grown a lot since then, and that kind of thing doesn't happen at this point in time. And the reason I tell you that is because we got a similar program that's going to start this Wednesday night. We're going to be teaching the first through the sixth graders in a Bible hour type program downstairs. We're going to call it. We're going to call the people in the class our Light Walkers. And if you're a parent of people of kids in that age group, we would encourage you to be here. We're going to have a great time. It's something we're going to enjoy doing together, and we're looking for visitors and all kinds of things that will take place there. Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 5 says, "You are all children of the light and children of the day. We do not belong to the night or to the darkness." That's what our flashlight's about. It's knowing the word well enough to apply it in every situation. Okay, this has come up, this crisis or this crossroads. How do I handle that? Well, I handle that with the word. And people would say, well, I don't have time to go get my Bible and look up a passage. Well, that's the point. When we have the word ingrained in our heart, then we're able to apply it because it's instantly available to us. We see God's power in the light that he creates. And we have that analogy constantly all around us. I'd like to end this morning by sharing with you a story I've shared several times before. It's just one of my very favorites. These two guys, or maybe there's more than two guys, they're out hunting and they're really enjoying the experience. And they're a long way from the car, and so they stay a little too long, and the light's really starting to fade. And then as they finally leave and start heading for the car, they're having trouble navigating across the countryside. And there's a little bit of a storm coming up. And every now and then, there's a flash of lightning. And when that lightning flashes, they use that glimpse to refocus their direction. And they can tell whether they're going the right way or maybe they've wandered off a little bit off of the right path. And so they use those glimpses literally to lead them back to the car so that they find safety. And I constantly am thinking about how that really is the way that God works in our lives. It would be nice if God were available to us visually every moment of every day, but it doesn't happen that way. But there are in our experiences these moments when we see God's presence so clearly that we can correct our path. Or we can know that we're on the right path. We've been on the right path. That information is so useful and so beneficial to us. Revelation chapter 4, verse 5. "From the throne came flashes of lightning, rumbling and peals of thunder. In front of the throne, seven lamps were blazing. These are the seven spirits of God." Those flashes of lightning, even in Revelation, are mentioned. I hope you'll think about light. I hope you'll think about the beacon. I hope you'll think about the lighthouse. I hope that you'll think about your personal flashlight. Because all of those things have incredible application as we try to live the kind of life that God would like for us to live. As we always do at this point in time, we extend an invitation.